The next player we're going to look at is Jamie Cripps, 162,000. Played 4 games last year, each time as a sub. He's been talked about in fantasy circles for a while now during this preseason, and it looks like he'll lock down a spot in their best 21 under new coach Waters. He had 8 disposals for 36 DT points against the Cats and a quieter 18 DT game against the Swans. How do you see Cripps? Do you think he's a big enough fantasy scorer to overcome that price tag?
We were at that game and I was pretty impressed with seeing him run around. I think the main concern for me is talking to St. Kilda people is that he has really struggled with injury in the past, and although he definitely seems to have had a good preseason from all reports and could break out, I don't want to pay that premium when I'm getting someone with an injury history. So that's probably the main thing turning me off him. But he does look to be best 22 for St Kilda and should be putting up solid scores, I think.
Now, the real rookie that we want to take a look at is Tom Ledger, 113K, listed in the midfield. Had 33 DT off 9 disposals against the Swans and 34 DT off 8 disposals and 6 marks against the Cats. Job security isn't too strong just considering the Saints' midfield depth, but you got to think if he keeps up such form, and he was clearly a standout player on ground as we were watching, that he should break into the team.
Sure. And you'd think that Waters would be looking to play young kids like him and get lots of game time into the young kids, because you'd think that he kind of has to. I know that you were telling me something about Chris Scott from last year had to play 4 Geelong players that were under 20 games or something. Was
under
that right?
50 games, yeah. It was in his contract.
Which is just crazy. But you'd think that Waters would just have to do that. Like, it would be essential that he played 4 or 5 young kids every week, and you'd think that Ledger was one of them. I would have some concerns that he would be getting the sub vest at different stages, but if he puts in a really strong next 2 or 3 weeks, he might get his way into that top 22 and be a reliable scorer. What do you think?
Yeah, I like him, but there are a lot of rookies contending for spots. We'll probably briefly cover all of them. There's Cripps that we just talked about. There's Ledger. There's Milera and Ross. And there's Bo Wilkes. Now, they all have different spots around the ground and whatever, but there's just a lot of rookies that will fit into the team. And obviously, they're not going to start bleeding all these rookies at the same time because they still think they can challenge this year. So where they're going to fit in, the rookies are likely to be where they have holes on the ground. They lost Zach Dawson. They've had retirements of key position defenders and recent years, and they drafted Bo Wilkes, and I think he's going to play a fair amount of games. If you have Cripps already coming in, and you still got young players like Stanley who are only just now, you know, really consolidating their spot in the team, how many other rookies can you fit in without seriously degenerating your chances? And I don't think they're going to give up until they've lost X amount of games. They're going to push for a premiership. Or try to, anyway. So, having said all that, Milera v. Saad, I think most people are of the mind that one of either Milera or Saad will play. Who do you like more?
They were both quite impressive, weren't they? I think I was probably a little bit more impressed by Saad, but then I also knew a bit more about him going into the game. And I think pre-Christmas, Saad was a lock in a lot of teams and then sort of drifted out, but had a really good season in the VFL last year. Should be able to provide an alternative target to Milne up forward. I think he'll get some games. I think he's got a premium. I think he's about 124,000. So he's not in my current team, but he's definitely on my watch list. And I was pretty impressed by what I saw first up.
I think the only problem with those two blokes is probably scoring potential isn't quite there. What has me keeping them out of my team at the moment, but definitely will keep watching, and Saad did press me more out of the two. Saad just seemed more lively while he didn't have the ball to me than Milera, so it seems like he'd have better job security because of that perceived stronger forward pressure, but that was just from my eye. Now, Seb Ross is one that we should talk about. I guess Ledger's strong game probably didn't help his chances. He is a midfielder, am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And really did have good raps on him. I think he tagged Goddard in the intra club a couple of weeks ago. Probably wasn't quite as impressive in the game that we went and saw.
The last player that we're going to talk about again is a rookie that we've already mentioned, and that's Bo Wilkes. Personally made his way out of my team on Friday night. He is way, way too defensive.
He's been there all preseason as well, and you would think that someone who's had a few years on the West Coast list, he shouldn't be suffering from nerves too much, but he seemed maybe a little bit nervous going for the ball. He wasn't willing to take possession of it. He was just punching a lot, and maybe things might change over the next couple of weeks. I heard that he's going to be best 22. I read somewhere today that maybe Simpkins actually going to be taking the full back spot, and his spot isn't so locked up as we might think, but yeah, he got out of my side as well. We were quite unimpressed.
Now onto the Geelong side, again, there's a lot of players to look at. Similar to St Kilda in age profile, I guess they have a lot of their old blokes moving on now and lots of opportunity while still potentially trying to contend for a flag. So we're going to look at some of their rookies. First up, player that you were quite impressed by, George Holland-Smith. Do you want to talk us through him, Mark?
Sure. As you informed me at the game, he was the under 16 captain of the Australian cricket team, which is quite impressive, and really surprised that he would have chosen footy if he was going to be that good. And I think he was like a third round draft pick for the AFL. So I was really impressed by his game though on the weekend. He was probably the one rookie in all the three games that stood out to me. And I think he'll get some game time this year. The concerns are that he might be the sub or sort of be in that 23 to 26 player at the Cats. And so when they're resting people, he will get a game, but whether he'll get consistent game time and consistent full minutes is another story. But he was actually the Geelong rookie that stood out the most for me.
I think it's a bit unfortunate. I think he's a bit too small for AFL footy still. Just another year away, I'd say, especially with the amount of talented youngsters Geelong have still to bleed. We've stockpiled them for a few years now, with most of them not being able to get in a game in the senior side for a few years. But
sure. Good sign for the Cats, though, to have someone that talented that will be struggling to get a game.
Yeah, and that's because of players like Simon Hogan, which I guess we should talk about now. He was 162,000. He had a total of 16 disposals for 66 DT. I know people were quite impressed. Last year, he was supposed to have broken into the Geelong side. If you look at career progression, slots potentially opening up last year, Hogan really should have been in our premiership team, but he battled with depression, and as a result of that, only managed one game as the sub. And that's why he's so cheaply priced. But when he came back from depression in the VFL, he did average the most loose ball gets and the second most contested disposals for the remainder of the season. So he is a ball magnet. The only problem is his kicking does leave a lot to be desired. He's a lot more suited to Dream Team than Supercoach, I reckon. He reminds me a bit of Prismal when he was playing for Geelong. Bit of a link player. Yeah, I'm not too sure about his Supercoach prospects at his current price, but I'd see him at least averaging 70. And with his job security and considering the amount of rookie exposure I want personally, he's in my team at the moment.
It's a pretty big call there, Marcus. I heard early on in the preseason that he would be taking over Ling's role as the number one tagger. Do you see that happening?
That's still a bit of an unknown at the moment. I've heard talk that Taylor Hunt, who did play halfback for us last year, he has superior fitness and he might be potentially playing that role as well. So I'm not quite sure where the pieces will fall at this stage, but Hogan does suit that tagging role.
At the game, he didn't exactly stand out to me as a player that I was excited by.
Sure.
But maybe then he just doesn't play a very exciting role. So
Stephen Motlop, though, he was exciting, surely. I don't think
Motlop,
he's
you were drooling over Motlop for the entire game. Every time he did something, you're jumping up in your seat and pointing at me. He was exciting, but he's also very fragile, so obviously not fantasy relevant in that sense. And I think you pay a premium as well for him.
Yeah.
The other player, probably two players that I want to talk about from that game would be Trent West and Oren Stevenson. Now, West was surprisingly impressive. I was more impressed than I thought I would be with West, and especially up forward, he looks like he can take a good mark, and his around the ground skills seem pretty good. Stevenson at different times was quite impressive and showed some skills in the ruck, but then at other times it looked like McAvoy was just sort of reaching over him and just tapping the ball away, and that might explain a little bit why Stevenson hasn't made AFL yet, and that's that he's probably just that little bit short for ruckman and might struggle against the real big guys and in Sandilands and Mumford and co. What was your take on the two ruckman, Marcus?
West played predominantly forward just because our forward line was so short. So, yeah, it was good to see Stephenson run around. I probably have a similar assessment as you do. I saw him as pretty weak around the ground, though, which I think you may not have necessarily agreed with. I thought, for example, if we compare him to Giles was a lot better around the ground than Stephenson was. He had four disposals in the game against the Swans and only one disposal against the Saints. So that sort of backs up my theory a little bit. I think Scott was pretty quick to hose down expectations on both Stephenson and Smets. Obviously, with fantasy football nowadays, when you pump out a player as a football coach, that's going to reverb around fantasy circles everywhere, and the hype's just going to grow and grow and grow. And I think he intentionally hosed both of those players down. Scott did say Stephenson couldn't take massive steps forward tonight, but I think he took a few small steps forward. He's a long way from being a certainty for round one, but he is a chance. I think he was probably going over the top to hose down expectations on Smets and Stephenson. I do think Stephenson will probably play maybe 10 to 15 games, but the worrying thing is Vardy is coming back early, and if he is available earlier than we thought, you know, maybe mid-season at one stage, but some media outlets are even saying as soon as NAB Cup games he might start playing some football again. I think On the Couch mentioned it, Mike Sheehan.
Yeah, Mike Sheehan. Yeah.
So that's very much a worry, because if you look at Geelong's ruck division, we have Dawson Simpson, who's recovering from back surgery, but he'll be available early in the season. When he's back, he will start pushing for the number one ruck spot with Stephenson, with the assumption that West will move forward if we need the extra tall. Then you've got Vardy, and when Vardy comes back, Vardy and West will pretty much be our ruck combo, you'd think. Stephenson won't get a look in then, I'm almost certain of that. So I'm not sure. His job security is suddenly looking a lot more shaky, with Vardy maybe coming into the fray a lot earlier. Having said that, you know, it is a relatively young ruck division. I expect it will swap and change a bit throughout the season. So Stephenson will likely still get maybe 10 games, but his prospects look diminishing as Vardy's chance of early return looks on the up.
Sure, and the reason why this is all important is that I guess you still think that he is a lock in most people's Supercoach teams at the ruck 3 or ruck 4. Sure. Is that right? Yeah. So the reason why I guess this discussion is important is because if you're going to play a rookie at ruck 2 in Giles, obviously,
yep,
does that mean that you do need the cover of Stephenson? And so with his diminishing chances, as you've suggested, does it mean that you can't play Giles at ruck 2 anymore? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a really tricky one, and that's something I've been tossing up over the last few days. Now, personally, I have reverted back to the two premiums for now, and that's mainly because I'm still not sure what's going to happen with Giles and Brogan. But if we see Giles and Brogan work together and Giles still scoring well, playing maybe a number one ruck or playing well enough across the ground or in the forward line when he's resting, when Brogan's playing as number one ruck, then I'd have confidence to play Giles at ruck 2 if he's 70s or 80 points per game and definitely going to play every single game. But we're going to start seeing some inconsistent performances because Brogan might take a significant chunk of the ruck and Giles might be stuck on the bench or struggling around the ground, and he chucks in the odd 40 or something like that, then I think that strategy goes out the window straight away. So it's only because I haven't seen that dynamic that has me a bit nervous and has me reverting to two premiums for now. But
sure, well, yeah. Hopefully Brogan and Giles are both in the same team this weekend, and I think next week's show we are going to look a bit more depth into the ruck, so maybe we'll revisit it then and see if we have some more information.
Now, just touch quickly on Billy Smets. He didn't play quite as well as I'd hoped for. Obviously, he'd been overhyped. 7 disposals for 20 DT, so it's more he didn't get enough of the ball, because when he actually did, it was quite impressive. He's clearly quite a classy player, although, Mark, I did remember you note that he seemed a bit out of his depth at some point.
Sure, that seemed about right. And I think that Scott, whether he was just hosing down expectations or not, I think Scott said that as much in over the next couple of days, where he's probably going to struggle to be best 22 every week. He does have quite a lot of potential, but probably not quite there yet and still needs a bit of work and development.
I do think probably first game nerves probably played a bit of a role, though, because Scott had previously said that Smets normally has a lot of time and space around the ground. And I know, Mark, that you noted against him that he seemed to be caught a bit or maybe looked like the game was going a bit too fast for him, which normally doesn't happen. So I think it's probably that first transition. He's expecting to have as much space as he normally does and then maybe didn't. And so hopefully we see a bit more improvement from him in the remainder of the NAB Cup. Just going to finish with Smets by reading out the Scott quote. Smets didn't get a lot of the ball, but he does look pretty exciting when he gets near it. He's probably been a little bit overhyped, Billy. It's about his 10th game in 2 years. We like his training form. He didn't look out of place tonight, but he's got a very long way to go before he can command our spot in our best 22, which is what Mark referred to before.
Sure. One more player I wanted to touch on was Joel Selwood. Didn't he look magnificent?
Yes, he did. 16 touches in that one game. Now, Sydney Swans, Tommy Walsh, if he was on your list, cross him off now. He had 2 disposals, 2 frees against, -1 DT against the Saints. Fortunately, even though the hype's been strong, he doesn't quite look ready yet. Or maybe I'm reading too much into it. But for now, barring any serious improvement, I think Walsh is off most lists.
Absolutely, totally agree.
And the last one from this tri-series would be Adam Goods. 7 disposals, 3 marks, 2 tackles, 2 goals for 41 DT against the Saints. Clearly the dominant player on the ground. I remember you tweeting about him while we were actually at the game, Mark.
Absolutely.
And then in the third game, unfortunately, played up forward and was double and triple teamed. So only managed 5 disposals, 2 marks, 2 tackles, and for 24 DT against the Cats. But Mark, how do you feel about starting Goods this year? You know, we've talked about him traditionally starting off slowly. Will he buck the trend this year?
That's the million-dollar question at this stage. The way he played in that first game was just incredible. Like, he just really showed that he was a step above a lot of other AFL players. The concerns for me would be the second game, where he played almost exclusively as a forward. I know during the first half of last year, he spent a lot of time playing exactly that role, and I'm sure he was probably still really fit at the start of last year as well, but just was probably nursed through the first half of the season a little bit. And whether that'll happen again this year, I don't see any clear reason why it won't happen again this year. And it definitely has a huge effect on his ability to pump out those big scores. If I knew he was going to be playing in the midfield every week, I'd pick him in a second, especially with Sydney's relatively easy start to the year, playing GWS in the first round. But I just wonder whether, because he doesn't miss a game ever, whether they do just nurse him through that first part of the year, and so that he will still be strong in coming through to interfinals.
We're going to move to Brisbane, Gold Coast, Melbourne. Jonathan Brown only managed 18 and 20 DT games.
Can I just say that this was almost the most unwatchable games that I've seen in a long time, because it was wet and it was nab and it wasn't. I just really found it really difficult to watch these games. Rant over. Go on.
Yep, blew out some cobwebs. Probably want to see him playing a bit more NAB Cup games before we make definitive call, because he hasn't had his hands on the football for a while now.
And it was like, it's not good conditions for a big man. Like, it was just torrential rain either before or during some of the games. So I think it would be pretty harsh to be judging Brownie's performance on that. And considering the conditions, he did get the ball a bit. So I'm definitely reserving judgment. It's unfortunate he's not going to play this week, but I'm pretty sure he'll play the week after.
Now, Elliot Yeo is one player that we should probably mention. He wasn't on my radar, admittedly, before Saturday night, but 13 disposals and 47 DT points will get you there. So, Elliot Yeo, you are obviously on my watch list now. Mark, how did you find his game?
I honestly didn't know much about him either before the game. I still really don't know much about him. I think he's rookie listed still, so might have just been one out of the box and contributed by the weather. While the weather affected Brownie's ability to dominate, it probably advantaged some of the smaller players that might not necessarily do that in regular conditions.
On to the Gold Coast players. Gary Ablett played the one game, 12 disposals, 33 DT. I think the most impressive thing was he seems to have grown even more as a leader on field. Not sure how Supercoach relevant that is, but there's not too much to say on Ablett's prospects after just one short Lock. NAB Cup game, but yeah, lock him in. Lock and throw away the key. Now, Aaron Hall is somebody that shot up in my books. We have Absolutely. Heard a bit about him. He is a mature age, I think 21 years of age. So we had
still our pretty eyes young
on him a bit. Yep, still pretty young. Absolutely delivered. 6 disposals, 3 marks, 3 tackles, 2 goals for 49 DT against the Demons, and 9 disposals for 25 DT against the Lions. Played at half forward and couldn't tell at all that it was his first NAB Cup outing. Worked hard when he didn't have the ball to get the ball back for the team. He did lay 4 tackles and was actually clean with the football when he had it. And you'd think he's definitely going to be playing senior AFL football if he keeps this sort of form up.
Sure. I think I know a lot of coaches that just logged into their Supercoach teams on Saturday night and put Aaron Hall into the forward line. Yeah, I mean, he's still a little bit young. Again, the conditions just make me not quite sure about how to take all of these scores from these three games. But he did look to have some pretty decent skills. And I guess another concern might be that he plays for the Suns and he's a forward, so he might struggle to sort of kick as many goals as he did on the weekend. Looks pretty good, especially compared to the fact that there's very few forwards that are standing out.
The last Gold Coast player I kind of want to touch on is Carmichael Hunt. He's been talked up a bit after talk that he's maybe moving into the midfield. Maybe not as many fantasy coaches have been sucked in, but just wanted to say he didn't actually get that much of the football, although I did see some very promising things that he brought over from rugby league, but still a long way off being fantasy relevant. And I think if I can compare his game to anyone in the midfield in the AFL, it would probably be one of your boys from Essendon, Mark, Sam Lonergan, probably extracting at the bottom of packs and doing a lot of tackling, but limited scoring potential.
Sure, I agree with that assessment.
We'll move on to Melbourne. Mark, any players catch your eye there?
Well, obviously the magnet stood out, James Magna. What are his details? I know that he averaged 30 possessions in the VFL last year and obviously dominated on the weekend in the wet. Do you know much more about him?
Yeah, he was recruited because Neil wanted some grunt into the side. And if you remember last year, I think Brett Ratton's the one that started it. And I think even a few Geelong players said it, that Melbourne played bruise-free football. And the exact opposite of that is what we saw from the Magnet Magna. He was laying tackles left, right and centre. I think he had 7 for the night, not including the additional pressure act that he put down. Obviously, as Mark said, the wet conditions obviously favour that sort of game style. So very, very impressive performance nonetheless from a rookie listed player that really we hadn't heard too much from up to this point.
Sure. I think at this stage, on the evidence that we have, most people should probably have him in their teams, but whether he would be able to take a position on the field each week for you, you'd want to reserve that judgment for a few weeks.
Yeah, and I think he's likely to get promoted because I think Gawn and Spencer are on Melbourne's long-term injury list. So the other rookie, Mark, is Tom Couch. Do you know much about him?
Was impressed with his kicking on the weekend. Again, given the conditions, his kicking was quite good. He, again, another mature age. I think he's maybe even 23 or so, and probably adds a bit more grunt to that midfield. I was actually pretty impressed by Couch as well. So it'd be pretty hard to have Magna and Couch both in your team, but I think you should probably have your eye on both of them because both decent potential to be best 22 for Melbourne.
One player that I do want to mention that has shot into probably fantasy considerations is Matthew Bate. Former first-round draft pick, and he spent all his time in the midfield on the weekend. He had 11 disposals for 25 DT against the Suns, 13 disposals for 49 DT against the Lions, kick-to-handball ratio of 2.4 for the two games, which we absolutely love as fantasy coaches, and he could be a very nice smoky selection this year.
A lot of Melbourne fans would be very frustrated with Bate that he hasn't been able to live up to expectations yet. And I know he's been dropped from the seniors and gone down and then just dominated in the reserves and sort of come back up. And he's sort of always just been a little bit fringe player at Melbourne. Doesn't really have a scoring history to speak of. 294,000 as a forward. From what we saw on the weekend, that actually looks like a bargain.
I guess we're going to need to see this sort of consolidated over the NAB Cup, but assuming he keeps this up, you'd think that he's going to break into a lot of teams.
Yeah, I think maybe more DT than Supercoach, but I mean, he's a quality player. I'm sure he's in Faz's team, given their connection.
cheap shot considering he's not here, but I like it. I like it
a lot. I got to take him.
Yeah. Now, Mitch Clark is one I just want to briefly mention before we move on to the last trio of games. 419,000. I know it was in Supercoach considerations for a few years previously, especially after he had that really good year playing in the ruck when Brisbane's stocks were depleted. But as Neil forecasted, he played as the Demons' number one key position forward, which really is enough to rule him out of all fantasy considerations. And just as evidence of that, he scored 41 DT in the first game, but -6 in the next game, which is precisely why we should be avoiding players like that. Inconsistent key position forwards in weaker teams pass. Now, on to the last trio of games, Port Adelaide, Adelaide, and Carlton.
Carlton are a top four chance, and they didn't win a game in the first round of the NAB, so that means the other team that didn't win a game in the first round of the NAB should feel all right about themselves, being Bombers and Greater Western Sydney. So that's the main comfort I took from this round of games. Do we start with Adelaide?
Rory Sloane, how did you like him?
What is this, his third or fourth season, I think. Looks to be moving into the premium field. And to be honest, with Adelaide's draw, I'm kind of really interested in finding one or two Adelaide premiums that I'd be able to bring into my side, because I think that they should score quite well. I think they should improve their ladder position, and they do have a few easy games with GWS, Port Adelaide and Gold Coast. So I think they play them all twice. So even if they don't win all of them, there should be a couple of blowouts at least in that period. So Sloan might be one of the better candidates that you find.
I think the only unfortunate part is mid-price midfielder, which is probably what pushes him out of selection. But otherwise, he had a really good game, and what a steal that they got him. I think around pick in the 40s, 44 was it? But yeah, what a steal he turned out to be. Sam Kerridge is a rookie that is pushing for selection in Adelaide, supposedly. Drafted last year, but his body is supposedly more AFL size than a lot of the rookies are. How did you find his game, Mark?
Like, he didn't obviously go out there and dominate, but I think he probably did enough. It was unfortunate he only played the one game, but I think he did enough from the talking to the Adelaide people that I know to probably still keep his spot in the 22. So if he can do that with his multi-position eligibility, he is in my side at the moment. I think he'll be in a lot of teams come round one if he's selected. So I was a bit disappointed not to see, I think it was Luke Brown, is it the defender, who got hit in the nightclub? I was a bit disappointed not to get to see him play because he's the other Adelaide rookie that I'm really considering. But did you have an opinion on Kerridge?
Yeah, but he's not actually in my side at the moment. I'm surprised he's already made yours, Ma.
More just because, like, who the hell else am I going to pick up forward? I'm not seeing a huge array of great forward rookie selections at this stage. So he's actually been in my side for just quite a while now.
Okay. To Port Adelaide, Chad Wingard, which is a player that you touched on previously. Mark, do you want to run us through him?
Sure. I think he only played the one game, the first game against the Blues, and just racked up the possessions. And even really early on in the preseason, of all the high-priced rookies, he was probably the one I was looking at the closest, mainly because, like, the sort of points that you were raising before about GWS not getting the biggest share of the points on a weekly basis, making their top-priced rookies obviously a little bit harder for them to score. And although Port Adelaide, I assume, to do quite poorly this year, they should score more points overall than Greater Western Sydney. All reports are that he's all class and that Greater Western Sydney might be quite upset that they let him go. I think there was definitely talk of him going sort of top three or four at one stage. He had 8 possessions, 4 marks, 1 goal, 2. You can't really ask much more than that for a first performance from a rookie.
If he keeps it up and he's locked up a spot in their best 21, then again, I've got to go back to, if you're exposing yourself heavily to rookies in the midfield, then at least one of these premium priced rookies will have to make it into your team. Otherwise, I feel you're just exposing yourself to too much risk. So I do like his game so far. Not on my team yet, but I'll certainly keep an eye on him for the rest of the NAB Cup. Darren Pfeiffer is another rookie that's in a lot of teams. He's got that mid-forward eligibility, which is obviously the best part about his selection. He's slightly more expensive at $126,000, but he actually played in the back line for Port Adelaide on the weekend.
And been training with them all preseason, apparently.
It's not the best thing for Dream Team and Supercoach, but considering that Port Adelaide will actually see a lot of ball in the back line in 2012, that's actually not too bad either.
Yeah, I like that. Look, as far as rookies go, he's probably got a lot better shot than some of the 18-year-olds because you can clearly see that he's got a much bigger body. He's on his third shot now. I think he started with Adelaide, and then a couple of years ago when he was at Carlton, I had him in my Supercoach team, and he was okay. You might get you 60 points a week, but you probably shouldn't be hoping for too much more than that. So considering you're paying a premium for him, his performance wasn't fantastic on the weekend, but I think he'll make his way into a lot of teams still.
Now, one player that's been talked about for Supercoach for years now, Robbie Gray. Mark, you've been stung many a time.
And do you know how he got me last year? He got me in the worst way last year. It wasn't even that he got injured and I traded him out. It's that he was completely sucking whatever every week. And it was just so frustrating having him in my team, and he was scoring 60s, and so I ended up trading him out, and then he just started to dominate, which was just the biggest tease. And he ended up averaging 91 for the season and came home really strongly, and to make it worse, he scored 160 odd against the Bombers. Like, yeah, he just burnt me again last year, like, without even getting injured. So I think he's actually a pretty good pick this year, in all seriousness, at 490. I think not a lot of people looking at him, but he should make almost a permanent move to the midfield or spend a lot more time up there. He's a goal kicking midfielder, really good skills, just really getting a really good understanding of the game of AFL now. And I'm pretty big.
Actually held up last year. His body actually held up.
It did. I think he played 21, maybe not 22, yeah. But the fact that he's proven that he can do that, I'm a big rap for Robbie Gray.
The only reason I think we're not talking about Robbie Gray as much as in previous years is that Gray has always been cheap, you know, priced at 490,000 to average 91. I think most people are reasonably confident that he's going to make that next step. It's just that there's still question marks over his body, and as confident as you are, there's still some sort of doubt in the back of your mind. So it is a lot of money considering the other options that are available, like Zaharakis, like Sidebottom, like Robinson.
I'd have him actually ahead of Robinson and Zaharakis myself.
Dustin Martin.
probably not Martin, but I think that realistically, if you pay 490 and you get a 91 average, you're probably going to be a bit disappointed, but you should probably be looking at his last 12 games or so and his run home. And if you could average something similar to what he did then you'd be really happy.
I guess the last Port Adelaide person we want to talk about is a new recruit, and they're always players to look at, Brad Ebert from West Coast. How did you find this game?
To be expected, really. I think that he always showed quite a lot of potential at the Eagles, and I think he was just seen as one of many good up-and-coming players at the Eagles, but he's more of a standout at Port. Again, 334,000 in the midfield. Like, it's so hard to pick any of these players. I think I'd rank him pretty close to Howard Melksham, maybe even a little bit ahead of that. So pretty big raps on him. But yeah, just so awkwardly priced.
Agreed. Now on to the last team, and we have gone through a lot this show.
There's another team?
Yeah, Carlton.
Yeah.
Matthew Kruser, how do you like his game, Mark?
The biggest question mark over Kruser is what his role is going to be. If you thought that he was going to be Carlton's number one ruck all year and play on ball, you'd probably pick him at his cheap price. But if you think he's going to spend a lot of time sitting at centre half forward, you might struggle to pick him just because he's going to be inconsistent and struggle to score the 100 every week that you want from one of your ruckmen.
Sure. He played majority of his time in the forward line on the weekend, and Warnock wasn't even the side, so not liking his prospects at centre-half forward.
Sure. What did you think of Heath Scotland, who just seemed to absolutely rack them up?
Yeah. He's old, though, isn't he?
He's 32, I think.
He's old, though, yeah. But, you know, considering the backline stocks, he sort of has to come into consideration. I think I have a problem picking players that seem to be priced close to their maximum. That's where I have Scotland at. But, you know, you cannot afford to be picky in the back line. So, to be honest, I've been looking at a few other premiums that I've previously drawn a line through, like Sam Fisher and Corey Enright. I'm thinking there are two premiums that have been premiums for a while now. And if you think about it, there is a chance, like Scotland, that they're going to drop off due to age. But they're also in two teams that, unlike Carlton, are actually on the way down more so than on the way up. St Kilda and Geelong will probably see more ball enter into their defensive 50 this year, and because of that, they might get their hands on the pill a bit more. I know Corey Enright last year had more inconsistent season than he had in previous years, and that was because whenever Geelong had the really big wins, as a rebounding defender, he really just never came into the play that much. And he had a 96, which I think was his lowest for 3 or 4 years. So I'm sort of looking at those two, who are probably in a similar boat as Scotland, except in a team that's on the way down rather than on the way up.
Sure. I'm not totally convinced with that theory, but it's an idea that I can understand that you're working on.
you're working on. Thank you for the support.
I kind of think that ultimately you just want to be going for the teams that are winning, and you don't want to be picking teams that are going to be winning less, even if the defenders are involved. But you could be onto something there, and I could easily be proven wrong. I totally agree with you on Scotland. He will probably score over 100, and he will probably continue to rack them up. He probably doesn't have a whole lot of upside compared to his current average, given his performances in the last 10 or so years. The other player we should probably talk about is Kane Lucas, 220,000 midfielder, top 10 draft pick, has been in the system a couple of years, and there's a lot of big raps coming out from Carlton land. Is he someone we should be considering, given the fact that he's a bit cheaper than the Brad Eberts, and you can probably find a bit more value in him?
Yeah, I think improvement is probably, again, guaranteed with Lucas, but probably not to the same extent as Melksham and Ebert. I think they're pretty comfortably going to get to 90, you'd think. But Lucas, I'm not too sure. He might only move to 80. I don't know. I just don't see his improvement as that great as compared to Ebert and Melksham, who have, you know, stronger AFL experience bases than Lucas, who has been kept out of the team by Blues midfielders for a while now.
Okay. What about Paul Bower? Did you have an opinion on him? I know he's in a lot of teams at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's hard to tell, really, whether he's in their best 22. He was clearly in their best 22 before all those injuries hit. And then it seemed like because he was still getting games or would sneak into the team as soon as he was fit for selection and maybe had a good chop out at VFL, that he'd break back into the team. But eventually, I think last year, that sort of changed a bit. And he broke into the team a few times, but also was kept in the VFL quite a lot. So Carlton supporters have sort of changed their mind now and I know a lot of them don't actually see Bauer in their best 22. He
Sure.
played quite a defensive role on the weekend. I'm not absolutely sold on him as I was probably earlier in the season, where I was just very gung-ho on his previous Supercoach average and the fact that he's now fit. When they went over to Dubai, they had voting for who was the strongest trainer, and Paul Bauer was voted by his peers as the strongest trainer at Dubai. So he was tracking very well at that stage, but the hype has died down a little bit. I'd like to see him probably get more of the ball, less defensive, actually getting his hands on the pill and getting to use it a bit more, because he is a good distributor. He did score well for that in the past. That may be more eye-catching for both fantasy coaches and the Blues selection panel.
Sure. I see him almost a little bit like Thomas Murphy from Hawthorn, where he's probably good enough to be in their best 22, but the supporters of the team don't think so. And he's sort of like the whipping boy that they get whenever something bad happens, and they see him just all the mistakes that he makes rather than anything good that he does. But that's very much an outsider's perspective at this stage. It'd be interesting to see what happens over the next few games. And I know there are a lot of Carlton people that are saying he's not best 22. So 157,000. Keep your eye out for Bauer. Now, we could talk about Gibbs and Murphy and all the other Carlton premiums, but I think we've probably talked for long enough, Marcus, so yep. Maybe we should wrap it up.
Yeah, we'll be coming back to you next week, and I think the plan is for now to be doing a ruck show, so keep your eyes on yscc.com.au, and remember, follow us at facebook.com/yoursupercoachcoach. Or our Twitter hashtags are your_sc_coach and Mark's is FBDonkey. So follow us on those social media platforms. And thanks very much for joining us for the show. We're looking forward to providing you more content for the 2012 preseason.
Sure. I think the plan is we should be putting out a show a week for pretty much the next 6 months. So get on board.